Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Which is one of the most incredibly difficult finger peep plays, the solo, but while the hand is still playing the boom, doo, doo, doo. And I'm like, fuck you, you're a porn director. You don't know how to play that shit.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Look at her! She's turned her back! She doesn't care! I'll get killed as long as we judge our mom!
Anyone who thinks they can outyell me had better think again.
All right, everybody, this is Recotopia, episode 32. I'm Chris Atkinson.
I'm Jeremy Scott.
Today's big recommend is Kung Fu Hustle. And look at all you beautiful people commenting over there. That's amazing. Thank you so much for coming in and watching us today on the Tuesday. We got YouTube and Twitch rolling on the comments there. Mostly Twitch. Yes, it's just weird to me. I don't know why that's weird to me. Maybe it's because I'm old. I don't know. But anyway, hey, do you have any small recommends?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small, it's tiny, it's petite, it's wee.
I got two, and I'm actually really excited about both of these, which kind of hints that I'm not normally excited about them, but that's not what I mean. The first one is on Netflix. It's called Do Revenge, and it's very new. And I describe this movie as Mean Girls meets Euphoria with strangers on a train thrown in.
Maybe some Heathers, maybe?
Maybe some Heathers, yeah. And it's a very modern spin on those kinds of movies. There are several beats that I think you're supposed to anticipate certain things, and then you get other things. But the setup... The strangers on a train portion is the setup, which is that you have a girl at the end of the school year who has sent a naked video to her boyfriend, who's the most popular kid in school. And then the next day, that video has been disseminated amongst all the students. And she's humiliated. Then we go to the summer, and she meets Maya Hawke, Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke's daughter, who is Uma Thurman reincarnated, even though she's not dead yet. If you watch this movie, you will have a hard time. It looks like they deep faked Uma Thurman onto Maya Hawke's body.
Yeah, they say I was talking about this a while back when she got on Stranger Things, is that she looks like the exact, like, it's Uma Thurman but also Ethan Hawke. Like, there's like, it's the exact combination of those two people.
Yeah, it's really eerie. She's a great actress. They meet at this tennis club where they both hang out and or work. And, you know, Maya Hawke befriends her and basically says, hey, you know, I didn't watch the tape, for whatever it's worth. And they have this awkward kind of encounter. She eventually tells her one of the girls who helped spread the tape. And then our main character, Drea, is able to get revenge on that girl in spectacular fashion. And that girl's played by Sophie Turner in a really, really fun, almost cameo.
Nice.
Sarah Michelle Gellar is the headmaster of the school, by the way.
Oh, that's sweet.
And so they go back to school the next year, and they're at this assembly, and one of the things you've learned through their budding friendship is that Maya Hawke likes girls, and okay. at a camp 7 years ago, she told a girl how she had feelings for her, and that girl went and told the whole camp that she had pinned her down and tried to kiss her, and it turned her into a pariah, and it scarred her ever since. And unfortunately, that girl goes to this school they're both about to attend this fall. Maya Hawke just moved here. So they both have awkward encounters on the first day. Drea with the boyfriend who probably disseminated the sex tape himself, but it's not really known. And then Maya Hawke bumps into the girl from camp who had ruined her life. And they both end up in this bathroom while there's an assembly going on, licking their wounds, essentially. And they decide to do each other's revenge.
Ah.
Maya Hawke wants revenge on the girl who ruined her life at camp. Drea wants revenge on the boy who's the most popular kid in school, who's like saying things at the opening assembly like, you know, I feel really bad for whoever put this video out there. We gotta be allies, man. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so they hatch a scheme to do each other's revenge. And that's really all I want to say from here.
Okay.
Allie Ryder from Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always is in this movie. She plays the brother of the most popular kid in school. Just a great cast. Really crackling script. I really enjoyed it. It's like an 83 on Rotten Tomatoes. So there's a chance it's not your cup of tea, but you know, I said Mean Girls, Strangers on a Train, and Euphoria. So
mm-hmm. yeah,
that sets the table pretty well, I think. And it's on Netflix. It's called Do Revenge. It's brand new. Two thumbs up from Jeremy.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, that's right up my alley. I want to see that now, actually. I want to see that.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
There's a plethora of 4K steelbooks coming out, and I'm kind of a sucker for them, much like Aaron Dicer is, who is behind the scenes here today. One of them that showed up on my list was The Fog, John Carpenter's 1980 film. A lot of times I get these steelbooks, I'm like, okay, I'll watch this later or whatever. This one, I was like, I haven't seen The Fog in forever. I'm going to watch this now. And The Fog is not John Carpenter's like best movie by any means. It comes in the middle of a lot of like you consider good to great movies that he made during this period of time. It starts off with it's an old like spook story told by John Houseman, who both of you and I remember as the Smith Barney guys. Yeah. Like they make money the old fashioned way. They earn it. He's in The Naked Gun, and he's been in a bunch of billion things, but he's telling this story about how this town was started, or it's just a horror story about this the ship that's coming in to the island, and there's this fog that rolls in, and the ship is attracted by this light, and it turns out to be something false or something that's misleading or whatever, and it ends up killing everybody on the boat. And the story is that on the anniversary of this, 100 years from now, these people on the boat will come back to get their revenge on the people that killed them and everything. So we are taken to everyday life in this town, which is about to celebrate its 100th year anniversary, of course. Mm. And I think it's Adrian Barbeau who is the is it Adrian Barbeau? Oh my God. Anyway, she's a radio DJ, and she's talking about like it's 100 years since this town was built. We're gonna have a big party and everything. Meanwhile, there's a priest played by Hal Holbrook who is noticing that there's a diary that was written 100 years ago. One of his, it's like his grandfather, great grandfather, whatever, is writing all these entries in the book saying like, he was plotting to kill these people, kill this one guy at least or whatever. So it was, all in the name of God. He was being told to kill these people and everything. Mm. And so As the movie promises, as the movie title promises, the fog comes in on the 100th year anniversary, and with it, it seems to be some ghosts. They're knocking on doors. If you open up the door, you instantly get killed by whatever's on the outside. Some people are lucky enough not to open the doors. But it's fun just watch. This is an old style John Carpenter movie. It's this, there's all these people that you get to know during it. Jamie Lee Curtis makes a return John Carpenter trip in this one. Hmm. She is featured on this artwork. There is just getting to know all these people in this town as it goes along. It's really fun and interesting. You don't see movies like this much anymore. And yes, there is a horror element that's going to come in as it gets to the midway point or whatever. And it's totally fine, but I really liked all the first half of it better than the actual horror stuff. The horror stuff is fine. The horror stuff is what to be expected, but I really, really enjoyed this. I don't think I enjoyed it as much when I first watched it way back in the day, which was probably in the '90s or something like that. But now that it's gotten this 4K steelbook and everything, it's something that I think that people should take a look at. This is a really fun and interesting horror movie. I think you would really like this, by the way, Jeremy.
Interesting. I actually think I saw the one with the kid from Smallville.
Yeah, there was a Tom Welling, Maggie Grace version that came out in, guess what, 2005, awful, and it has a 3.7 on the IMDb. Which is extremely low. That is below the floor kind of rating. It is a bad, bad movie. So yeah, they tried to remake this in 2005. It wasn't very good at all. But this one, I think most people would enjoy this for sure.
Excellent. All right. I have not seen it. I will add it to my list. I do love that Seinfeld episode where Jerry gets hockey tickets from Alec Berg, and he says he's got a great John Houseman name, Alec Berg. My second small recommend for this week is a chess movie called Pawn Sacrifice. This came out in 2014. It stars Tobey Maguire. This actually has a great cast. Let me tell you who all's in it. Tobey Maguire, Liev Schreiber, Peter Sarsgaard, Lily Rabe, Michael Stuhlbarg, and more. Basically about a true story when Bobby Fischer returned from obscurity and played a couple matches in California against some Russians. And that led to him being in a tournament against Boris Spassky, who was the greatest chess player in the world at this time. That's who Liev Schreiber is playing. And Bobby Fischer is a complicated dude, man. There was never an official diagnosis, but it is believed that he was maybe schizophrenic, maybe had a personality disorder, maybe had Asperger's. There's all sorts of speculation because he was extremely erratic and extremely paranoid. And just a very, very difficult person. Peter Sarsgaard plays this priest who years ago beat Bobby Fischer when he was a competitive chess player. Mm. And that's who Bobby Fischer decides to make his second, which is basically his coach, his sparring partner in chess. Mm-hmm. And he has the patience of an oak tree to deal with Bobby Fischer. He's completely paranoid about everything. They're bugging my phones. They're spying on me everywhere I go. There's too much noise in the room where we're playing chess. He ends up playing the most famous game of chess ever played, game 6 of this tournament, in a ping pong room in the building they were originally going to have the tournament in, because that was the quietest room Bobby could find. And they had to televise it with a camera that had to be a certain distance away from Bobby because he didn't want to hear it. Just extremely eccentric, but one of the most gifted chess players of all time. And I think one of the movie's messages is if you're really, really, really great at chess, it will probably drive you insane. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he makes moves that he's never made before in this game 6 to the point where once Spassky realizes that he's going to lose, he stands up and applauds Bobby Fischer. And this really fucking happened. Mm-hmm. This is real. A grandmaster applauding an American dickhead who just beat him because his chess was so lyrical and beautiful. This is an Ed Zwick movie.
Should
give you some confidence because he's solid. It didn't make much money, but it made more than its, it made a third of its budget. So it lost money. It's on Hulu. If you have a premium subscription, it's on HBO Max with a regular subscription. The acting is really the reason to watch here. But I do think some of the chess is relatively authentic because they're dealing with real matches that were televised and people all over the world watch. So I've watched it twice in the last week. I really liked it.
There are a lot of movies about Bobby Fischer. I mean, the guy is, not someone to celebrate outside of his chess achievements and everything, but there are a lot of, he's a fascinating person to like make movies about and everything. By the way, 8 over here talks about a person who claims someone was cheating or whatever. This was Magnus Carlsen, who was the guy who went to play a match with this one guy that was a big cheating kerfluffle a couple weeks ago. And the first guy made a move. Magnus Carlsen made a move. Then he turned off his camera and didn't say anything and left.
Yep.
And the announcers were like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Did he just leave? And he's basically just protesting that this guy
basically, yeah, saying this guy has to be cheating.
I
should note, just for those of you who might be triggered, or just to set the record straight, Bobby Fischer was Jewish, but he was a noted anti-Semite. Mm-hmm. And the movie only briefly touches on this by showing him listening to inflammatory radio programming a couple times, mm-hmm. but it dodges having him do any of that overtly. And part of the reason is I don't think that's the part of Bobby Fischer's life that they're trying to tell a story about.
But it is
a factual thing. Complicated freaking dude. But great movie.
Shireen, by the way, says, how would you rate it compared to Queen's Gambit? Now, I haven't seen Pawn Sacrifice, and I don't think you've seen Queen's Gambit.
You're correct.
So I don't know if there's a way for us to say, but I really loved Queen's Gambit. I generally like chess movies. Searching for Bobby Fischer is a great movie. And the way you talk about this one, I know I would love Pawn Sacrifice.
Yeah. But
Queen's Gambit is a kind of a different animal. Just because I've seen enough about Bobby Fischer, I'd probably, even though I haven't seen Pawn Sacrifice, I would bet Queen's Gambit is maybe a little bit better than this. But still, doesn't mean that I don't want to watch this. So
yeah. So there you go. Please check it out.
Yeah. Next one, I went ahead and watched. I was gonna recommend something else, but I don't know. I don't know if I can give it the full on recommend. So I went ahead and watched another Criterion movie, rewatched another Criterion movie. One of an all-timers. It's Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal.
Oh, wow.
Starring Max von Sydow as this knight from the Crusades. And I saw this movie a long time ago and didn't understand what it was going for. And it's still a little bit on the cryptic side, but I understood it more this time because I'm just older now. I think I tried to watch this when I was 19 or something. And I was like, what am I watching here? But it's about a knight who's coming back from the Crusades and he finds this town is inflicted with the Black Plague. Mm. And, just before he hits this town, death in corporeal form or whatever you have corporeal form shows up to him on a beach and says it's time for you to go and Max von Sydow says, well, can't I do something about this? And death's like, no, you can't do anything about this. Well, what about this? Speaking, we're about to talk about chess again. He's like, what if we play a game of chess and get a little reprieve? And death is intrigued. He says, yeah, why don't we play some chess? That'll be great. So they start playing this game, and before you know it, like, it's the game doesn't continue. It's just him and his squire on a horse riding towards this town. And you're like, oh, well, he was playing chess a minute ago. Now they're going to this town. So they go into the town and they find out that, you know, there's a black plague is going around, and the religious fervor going around the town, has become extremely, abusive. There are people who believe that God sent this plague to the town and that people with the plague need to be whipped and they need to be punished because basically God punishing you already. So I don't know why they need more punishment, but anyway, he's finding out that that's what's going on. And, meanwhile, death will creep back in here and there. There's even a point where Max von Sydow is talking to somebody he thinks is a priest. And he says, I ran into death out there on the beach. And I'm playing him chess and I've got this great strategy that I'm using against him. And you find out the priest is death. Listening the whole time.
And the
movie follows a whole other set of characters too. These actors, this traveling troupe of actors who go around. One of them is a married couple with a child. One of the actors sees visions. He sees Mary and the baby Jesus walking out. He tells his wife about it. His wife is like, oh, you know, I don't know whether to believe you or not. We don't know whether to believe him or not until he sees later on in the movie, he sees Max von Sydow playing chess with death. And she only sees Max von Sydow, no death. Ooh. And so there's a lot of like little cool things like that. There's all these stories going on, and the movie has a lot of different themes. And I honestly will still need to watch it again because there's so many things that you can interpret into this movie. But there's one moment where they're burning a witch in the movie, and Max von Sydow says something to the effect of, who's in charge of this? Is this God? Is this Satan? Is this just nothingness? Is this, you know, what is this? Who's in charge of this? Like he's coming to terms with whether or not he should believe in God, yet he believes in God. So, He's having this struggle all the way through the movie, where he's like, I don't want to feel like there's a God here when I'm seeing all of this that I have seen. But if there is one, do I really want to deal with this kind of, this is something that a God could do? And if it's Satan, he's going back and forth on this, and there's a reason why this movie is an all-timer, right? Like it's one of those movies that makes you think a lot about religion and the bad effects of it. A lot of times there are moments of good as well in here, but it really makes you consider good and evil. Who's in charge? Why do I believe? What do I believe? Why do I believe what I believe? Such and so forth. Yeah. If you've never seen The Seventh Seal, it sounds like a movie that's 5 hours long. It's an hour and a half. It's an hour and a half. So
sold.
Yeah,
it does sound like a 5 hour movie, but I'm glad to know it's not.
Yeah, somebody asked if Bill and Ted was in this. No, that is Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. That's the movie you're thinking of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anyway,
good stuff.
So we're on to the big recommend.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Yeah. Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
This is a movie that I have in my Blu-ray collection. And I'll run across it from time to time, and it was still in its cellophane.
Mm.
And I was like, this is a movie I know I want to see again. And I think it was about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I was thinking this would be a good one to put on the big recommend stage. And so it was a great opportunity to break that movie open and rewatch. And I love Kung Fu Hustle a lot. I love Kung Fu Hustle. This is right up my alley. This is like, you know, this is Airplane inspired. This is these type of movies. Now, I think that if you are well-versed, and I am not, if you are well-versed in the old Hong Kong martial arts movies, you're going to find even more layers to this than I did.
For sure.
Because there are so many different references to other things that I've never seen that I had to look up later. That I was like, oh, okay, God, he's really doing a lot of references here in this movie. But it's the movie instantly sucked me in back in the day when we were, you know, when I was working in movie theaters, when the main guy played by Stephen Chow comes into this town, called Pigsty Alley. And he wants to become part of this giant gangster organization, the Axe Gang. He wants to be a part of them because he feels like they have the best lives. You know, they're the ones who get the women and they're the ones who get the money and so on and so forth. All those things that Scarface used to say. he comes in and he tries to scam this guy who's cut his friend's hair, and he's like, you made it look too good and everything. And tries to cheat him out of the money and all that. So eventually he ends up picking on as everybody in the crowd he thinks is weaker than him to prove a point, like he's going to fight them or whatever. And every time he picks on somebody, it turns out that they have these physical features that he did not see that were in the crowd. So like one, he picks on a guy who's like, he's like, that guy's short or whatever. And the guy stands up and he's like 8 feet tall.
And then, I wasn't pointing at you.
Then he points out somebody in the crowd who looks weak. And then he comes out and the guy's like got a normal face, but like this giant amount of muscles on his torso and everything. And then he picks on a kid and the kid comes out with this giant, like working out body and everything. At some point he tries to shoot some fireworks or something like that. And it hits the Axe Gang. The actual Axe Gang is walking past the town. This shoots some sort of signal or something, whatever. It's like, it's if you're in trouble or whatever, you can shoot these fireworks or something like that.
Yeah. And the Axe Gang comes running.
Yeah. And the Axe Gang gets hit by it. I think they get hit by the fireworks and they come in and they want to start some trouble, but then they find out that this town is filled with badasses and it's a crazy amount of badasses. So this town attracts the attention of the entire Axe Gang, who now want to like hire killers to come in and like wipe them out and all this stuff. Just a tremendous amount of characters in here. You'll notice, like the at the forefront of this, I wouldn't even know if you would call them heroes, but the landlord and landlady of this slum or whatever, they're not really good people. The landlord is constantly flirting with every girl that's in the town, and like is getting free meals. Yeah, getting free meals and all that. And the landlady herself is an old crank, always has a cigarette dangling from her lips. But they obviously have some hidden powers, because the landlady can run like Roadrunner, essentially.
Yeah.
And we don't know exactly what the landlord can do until much later in the movie, after the first beatdown that happens in this, the Axe Gang hires these harp. There's an actual Chinese word for whatever they're playing that those two guys are playing, but okay. I don't know how to pronounce it. But whatever they do, they hit these strings, they strum these strings, and these swords come out, or whatever they want to come out, spears, all sorts of different things come out when they're playing this
skeleton
thing.
Armies at one point.
Yeah, skeleton army. The three true badasses of the town, aside from the landlord and landlady, is the guy, there's three shop owners basically, and they all have different styles of kung fu that they know. And so they take these guys on in this big, huge thing. And then eventually later the landlord and landlady get into it. Meanwhile, our main character, played by Stephen Chow, is still trying to figure out how to get into this Axe Gang. At some point he gets taken by them and like handcuffed or whatever, but he's able to pick the lock. And because he's such a great lock picker, they think there might be some future for him. When he gets out, he wants to get revenge on the people of the town and everything. And comically goes awry because he tries to throw all these knives at the landlady.
Oh, my God.
All of them end up in his own body by the time it's over. Then he gets to go off the heel. He goes into some sort of traffic light. It's a 1930s like Chinese traffic light. So yeah. I don't know exactly what it is, but he's in this box. And all of a sudden you start seeing like him hitting the box. There's like these impressions of his palms just keep showing up on this thing, meaning like, oh, he's not only well, he might actually have some badassery that we didn't know about. And he like right after that scene, it shows his buddy and he's like, and the buddy turns around and Stephen Chow's just sitting there and he goes, what are you doing here? You know, like we don't even hear the story of how he got out of this traffic light or how he healed or anything. But the kid, the friend says, you've always healed better than I have, quicker than I have. So it's weird. He also has this side story with this girl's who's a mute. Who sells hot dogs? What is it she sells? I can't remember.
Lollipops, isn't it?
Yeah, she has a lollipop for sure in there.
I don't know what she sells.
I can't remember what it was, but he has this thing going on that is really the only person he's successfully robbing the entire movie is this mute girl who he robs from a couple of times, but then we find out they have an even more complicated history, that she was a little girl that was being picked on by a bunch of bullies and he tried to intervene and he got his ass kicked and he even got peed on and all this mm-hmm. other stuff. She saved the lollipop from that encounter and then gives it to him and he smashes it in a heartbreaking scene. But we slowly find out that this guy, as kooky as he is all the way through, does maybe actually have some powers, and those powers just need to get unlocked. And that's what happens later on once the Axe Gang hires the Beast. Mm-hmm. And there's a fun, the Beast is in jail and there's a fun escape sequence, a fun jailbreak sequence, including a Shining parody, in it. He breaks this guy out, the Beast, who doesn't look like much. He's an old guy. It doesn't look like he has any powers. They think they got the wrong guy for a while there. until finally they're like, prove that you've got these powers. And at some point you start seeing little inklings that, yeah, he may actually be this badass and everything. And finally, full blown badass. He doesn't seem like he can get hurt. He's got all the moves. And he runs into the landlord and landlady, and there's this big, huge fight in the kitchen where they're like giving it all they got, but like every punch just kind of like just molds his face a little bit and then comes back. It doesn't do anything. There's all sorts of stuff going on in this movie. It's just, I keep thinking like I've probably missed a few things in this. There's just going all over the place, but the action is so fun. It's so funny. There's so many things that are just hilarious in this movie. It's obviously got a huge like respect and love of old Hong Kong martial arts movies, and it even stars people who were in some of those movies. The guy who plays the Beast was apparently like right under Jackie Chan, like Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, and this guy who we don't know in the States that much. Wow. I think it's Lung Sin Lung is his name. This guy did a lot. The guy who plays the landlord was Bruce Lee's stunt double for a long time.
Oh, wow.
The woman who plays the landlady has been in a bunch of movies. Here in the States, we apparently don't know her much except for The Man with the Golden Gun, James Bond movie.
Wow.
Has a scene in that. But just as an aside, she was hired based on somebody else's audition tape. There was an audition tape of this woman, and in the background is this woman who plays the landlady. And Stephen Chow was watching this video and goes, "Who's that? Who's that woman?" And that's who I want in the movie. Wow. And that's how she got the movie. So
that's crazy.
Anyway, Kung Fu Hustle, a whole lot of fun. I hope you had as much fun.
Okay, so confession time.
Uh-oh.
I had never seen this movie before today.
Oh, okay.
My brain rewired its circuitry to think this movie was Kung Pao Enter the Fist.
Oh, okay.
Which I have seen once back in the day.
It was the Steve Odenkirk movie.
Being a very silly kung fu parody airplane type movie. That's what I thought we were watching.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen this. This movie is fucking rad.
Mm-hmm.
It's unique in that because it has so much respect for the classic kung fu movies, the fight scenes are awesome. This is a this is a comedy, but Yen Wu Ping is the supervisor of the fight choreography. That's the guy who did the Matrix choreography.
Yep.
And it shows because the fights are really good. And it's not as airplane-y as I was expecting, at least in the first 30 minutes. It does do some silly stuff toward the end, like when the landlady and landlord are like, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah,
and they just do all these cliche lines.
Yeah.
But I was most blown away by the stringed instrument harp battle and how that was visualized. It reminded me, in for different reasons, of that Music Note fight in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah.
In that, you know, music is being used as a weapon. At first, they behead the first guy with a song. He doesn't even get to fight. And then the second guy with the rings gets to fight, and then you start seeing them strum and like these tips come out, and then the camera work is low to the ground. And I was blown away by this movie. This will go immediately to the top of my favorite kung fu movies. There's just so much to like, especially the landlord and landlady. Even though they're not good people, they are far and away my favorite characters, except for maybe the doofus buddy of Stephen Chow.
Who says
stuff like, "Memories can be painful. It is a great blessing to forget."
He's like, "I didn't know you were so deep."
I was expecting a lot more slapstick, but there's a lot of subtle humor. There's a lot of dialogue humor. I do wish they had subtitled all of the writing and signs.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of those in this movie, but I couldn't tell what any of them said. And the camera even will linger on them sometimes. Like, even well, anyway, I like how the stakes keep going up. You know, mm-hmm. the Axe gang comes and turns out this town has three badasses who kick their ass. Well, then they hire this guy who comes in and, well, it turns out the landlord and landlady are badasses. And then we break out Beast, who has a toad mode. where he turns into this toad with a bloated neck that like shoots out chi around him or something. And then, of course, you have your main character who's just a low life wannabe thug, but who has these latent, and the movie sets this up pretty well because the landlady says earlier on, you either have it or you don't, you're either born with it. And it's like a one in a million chance. Mm-hmm. And then she sees something in him that makes her realize, oh, he has it. Mm-hmm. And then he gets that Buddha vision. It just keeps escalating and escalating, but you can watch this as a comedy or you can watch this as an action movie. And it mm-hmm. It works perfectly as both. I'm really, really glad that you suggested this. My biggest laugh was when the townspeople are trying to say to the landlord and landlady, you have to train us. You have to teach us kung fu. Mm-hmm. This is the moment where she says you either have it or you don't. And one little punk kid who's like 13 goes, and does like the shittiest kung fu moves you've ever seen and goes, it is obvious that I am the chosen. He gets punched in the face. Yeah. I laughed for 5 minutes at that moment. Oh God. This will be a rewatch frequent for me. And it's really, really good. I love how they took so much care with the action and didn't just make funny jokes and half-ass the action so that it can work on two levels there.
There are of course a million different references in this, and a lot of the references I haven't seen the movies for, but there's a great moment in once the landlord and landlady come after they beat the harpists. They go and run into the Axe gang car. Like they're just instantly there. They don't show them like actually open a door or anything like that. They're just in the back. And she's in the back seat with her cigarette, chilling and everything. And she does this movement. She does all these movements, like cracks her knuckles and does all this stuff and wags her finger. That's from Way of the Dragon. That's a Bruce Lee movie that they did that for. They did a little homage for. There's a part where the character of Donut, when he gets beaten or he's about to die, he tells the landlord, what are you prepared to do? Which is a parody of The Untouchables.
Yeah.
It's when Malone is dying in The Untouchables. So there are like a million different ones just to point out those two. And you pointed out the Spider-Man one that they did.
Yeah.
I if I'm not mistaken, maybe they may have translated that into other things, into different languages. And that may have been just the fun thing to translate it to in America was to do that. And there may be other references that other audiences may catch in their version. But this is one of those movies that makes me go, okay, Stephen Chow, I want to find that list of movies that you were influenced by, and I want to watch all of them because I just want it, like, and then watch this again and then have an even deeper understanding of this movie.
So. He's still making movies? What is he up to? I'm Googling him right now.
I don't know. I think in this movie, he's like 42. And he's still making movies after this, but I don't think he's made anything that has quite gotten to this. I've heard rumblings of a sequel to this movie, but I don't know if that's official or what. So
yeah, it doesn't look like he's done much. He's done a little bit of acting here and there, and he's made four movies since this.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never heard of any of them. So.
Oh, and he also references one of his other movies in this too, was when the kids are kicking around the soccer ball and the ball goes over to the one guy and he stomps on the soccer ball and he says, no more soccer or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a Shaolin soccer thing. So,
yeah.
Which is another, by the way, Shaolin soccer is another movie that I'd like to rewatch of his. And he's got a couple of others that are like this before this. So I definitely want to see more of him as well. So anyway, I hope all of you guys out there loved Kung Fu Hustle. I'm very delighted that Jeremy is all on board on this anyway.
All right. Well, now the task falls to me to select a double feature.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
I
dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Mm-hmm. Which I have not alerted the producers to, so there will probably not be an image on screen. I was almost certain. I only watched this movie this morning because I like to try and be as fresh as possible for these podcasts. And after about 30 minutes, I was almost certain it was going to be Iron Monkey, which is another Yen Wu Ping choreographed comic kung fu action film. And it ultimately just, the more Kung Fu Hustle went on, the more it felt like that was just too on the nose. And I don't like to be on the nose. Mm-hmm. The film also has visually several moments that reminded me of the Matrix movies, particularly when he throws a bunch of suited guys up into the air. Reminded me of that Neo Agent Smith brawl. And there are a lot of the one similarities to the character that Stephen Chow is playing, and he awakens at the end to finally beat. I wouldn't be surprised if Matrix was, you know, an influence here. But what I decided to zero in on for the double feature is the care that the movie took with the comedy and the action. And they didn't let the action look sloppy just because they were making a jokey movie. So my double feature is Game Night.
Because
it's very funny, but they shot this movie like a big budget action film, and it shows, and it pays off in several areas, including that one shot sequence where they're running the Fabergé egg through the house. And so that would be the theme of my double feature, action comedies that care as much about the action as they do the comedy. And so I would go with Game Night.
I love that pick. It's so offbeat from what you would normally think from here, and I like the like what you've paired here.
Thank you.
And your reasoning behind it. So, I can get down with that. All right, now this is even a mystery to me, guys. Mm-hmm. What is next week's homework going to be?
So I'm going to give a little prep. The next week's homework is not currently on any streaming services. This will be a movie that you will have to pay $2.99 to rent on one of the streaming services like Amazon or YouTube. And I was actively researching before we started recording, and I'm going to continue when we're done, on a way for me to buy some rental credits that we can then maybe put on the Discord, so that, you know, every now and then somebody who can't afford a rental for Recotopia episode upcoming will be able to get one for free. So I'll be working with the mods over on Discord once I figure that out to get that implemented. But
all right, that sounds amazing.
Next week's movie is The Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah.
I'm accidentally recommending two John Mahoney movies in a row.
Yeah.
After Eight Men Out, but he's not the key player here. This is the Coen Brothers, 1994. Tim Robbins on his way up the stardom ladder. Paul Newman already at the top. And it's just a quirky ass period piece comedy where they basically install Tim Robbins as a puppet leader of this company that they can then control. They're trying to tank the stock price because they have a scheme to make money, but Tim Robbins invents the hula hoop and starts making them mega dollars. Lots of great quirky performances in here. This is still my favorite Coen Brothers movie. I like 80% of their movies, so maybe I will like this more than you. But it is underseen, under talked about, you have Jennifer Jason Leigh giving an all-timer performance.
It's my favorite. It's probably my favorite performance of that movie, although she gets unfairly singled out by people who hate the movie. So, but I love it. I love.
Thank you, J.C. Davis, for reminding me there is a trigger in this movie. Go to Does the Dog Die? Read up on it. Make sure that you know where it's coming in the film so that you can skip it. It's not my personal trigger. There's a suicide in the film. It's early and it's played for laughs. It's not the kind of suicide that triggers me. But it's there. We should warn you. Mm-hmm. So, there you go.
Get off this merry-go-round.
It looks like it's on Google Play Movies and TV. $2.99 everywhere. So I'm going to try and get some YouTube codes to you guys so some of you guys can watch this and join us next week.
Awesome. That'd be great.
All right. So Let's do some questions. I think we have a few minutes for some questions.
Right. Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I'm listening.
Take one of your top 10 favorite movies and replace the lead actor in a way that you think you would still love the movie as much.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Back to the Future, and I was wondering, like, you know, do I want to recast it with somebody who was a back then an actor, like, you know, because Eric Stoltz obviously was around, was almost Marty for a while.
Yep.
Was Marty for a while. So did I want to think about actors from the 80s who were around Michael J. Fox's age? And then I decided, nah, let's just pretend like we're living in 2022 and put in some. I went with Tom Holland for Marty in Back to the Future.
Nice.
I think Tom Holland would be great. Nice. He might, I don't know if you would consider him too old these days, but which is weird. If we were to kind of doing this where we're bending time and space, Tom Holland, when he was young enough to be high school, he's still playing high school kids. So, yes. I mean, I think he would do a great job in a Back to the Future movie. I think he's got all that Michael J. Foxness in him. So
interesting. Interesting. Good answer. I want to interrupt this question because it looks like Slab is telling us that Hudsucker is available through Canopy, which is a U.S. library based streaming service. So look for that there also. And my answer to this question would be The Martian. And everybody knows mm-hmm. how much I love that movie, and Matt mm-hmm. Damon's awesome in it. But when you read that book, he's not written as a heartthrob. Like, I remember feeling like, I remember picturing Ed Snowden yeah. as this guy in terms of what he might look like and how he might be analytical and think. So the first thing I thought of was Neil Patrick Harris, because the person has to also mm-hmm. be able to pull off not only the intelligence, but the sarcasm. Mm-hmm. But I'm landing on Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Because I think Paul Rudd has a very everyman quality. Definitely can pull off the sarcasm, definitely can play intelligent. So yeah, The Martian with Paul Rudd would probably not lose any points for me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, another question. Aside from CinemaSins work, when have you ever overanalyzed something in a movie or a TV show?
The Natural, almost any baseball movie, really, but The Natural has a lot of moments. Well, it's not as bad as other baseball movies, but it has a lot of moments where someone makes a swing that would not get that result. And there's a scene, I don't know if you remember The Natural enough to remember, there's the, you know, he has this long slump when he's dating Memo Paris, played by Kim Basinger in the movie.
Yeah.
And then Glenn Close stands up in Wrigley and he hits a home run. And so he gets back on track because Glenn Close is back in his life and everything. And so, like, the next day, there's this big slow motion thing of him hitting another home run the next day. He's apparently hit four in this day because the broadcaster is like, they go through all the broadcaster play by plays of all of his home runs. And on the last one, which is apparently this fourth one, he hits one and the ball goes straight up. I mean, it's not, there's no way it's a home run, but everybody's looking at it like he just clocked it. And it just always bothered me. And then, you know, like Wesley Snipes in both Major League and The Fan, the swings that he's taking, he's not a superstar. I mean, in Major League, they make a little bit more realistic because they do make him a slap hitter, not a power hitter and everything. But
yeah.
Even the times when he's doing the little, even those things, it's like hard to believe Wesley Snipes as a major like hitter of any sort, especially in The Fan where they're trying to make him out to be like Barry Bonds or something like that. So almost anything baseball, when I see, there's a scene in The Natural where somebody's like taking batting practice and he does this weird, like he half cocks all the way back like this and then swings like this, and it's like no, I mean, you may have hit that, but there's, that wasn't, you know, that wasn't real. Come on. The Eight Men Out has several of those, like the swing just doesn't make sense for what the ball trajectory and everything. But anyway, yeah, baseball movies, that's the ones that I really like. And you do that in football movies too, like no, that's not how you do that, but whatever. So
yeah, anyway. Sports movies are always, especially if you're really into a certain sport, like there are a couple of shots in Hoosiers where the ball leaves their hands and then we cut to a shot of it going in, and I'm like, there's no way that fucking ball had the trajectory to go in the, but you gotta, that doesn't bother me so much. But I play a lot of golf, so bad golf in movies, like almost all of Happy Gilmore.
Oh yeah.
Or in Swingers, I bet you none of those fucking guys had ever played golf in their entire lives when they've shot that golf scene, because they look like fish out of water.
Well, you know, and then they do obviously like not they don't play very well because they're sitting there like
so. But even their bad, like even bad players will have like the right body setup, like it looked like they'd never held a golf club in their life. And then bad piano playing always gets to me.
I took
about 11 years of piano lessons. It's not easy to fake. Especially if you're not a musical person. This was why like Ryan Gosling straight up learned how to play that piece for La La Land, because he knew he wouldn't be able to fake it. But bad piano playing always bothers me, where you can tell, oh, this person is playing high notes, but their hands are all the way down here.
That is a thing too. Like, I don't notice it as much. I'm not a musician, but you guys who are musicians out there, every time there's musicians in a movie, you're like, they're not playing that at all. Now sometimes even me, not as a musician, will see something where it's like, obviously you're not playing that, because it's, you'll see somebody drumming or something and they're just hitting like two, like doing this, and it's like, and it's like, no, he's barely hitting it back there. What are you doing?
I was watching that movie X that came out recently.
Yeah,
and there's a scene in there, they're making a porno in a cabin in like the 70s, I don't know when the fuck it is, and he plays Landslide by Fleetwood Mac, which is one of the most incredibly difficult finger he plays, the solo, but while the hand is still playing the boom doo doo doo, and I'm like, fuck you, you're a porn director, you don't know how to play that shit.
Over on the comments, it looks like Joseph says field goals in movies specifically. Yes, field goals are always, seems like they're really bad. Joseph also says, oh god, piano. Casablanca is something that is a huge one where it caught me off guard. Josh says, slang anachronisms always get me, even in books. Like, would a guy from the 1960s really use the word butt much, because the thing was written in the 90s? Yeah, exactly. You know, you'd be surprised though, like how many of our slang terms came a long time ago. Like, you wouldn't believe it sometimes. Like, you're like, oh, that's very modern phrase or whatever. And then you find out, oh, that originated in 1955 with blah, blah, blah. And you're like, what the fuck?
All right. Let's do one more and then we'll say goodbye.
All right.
What's a good movie line where the words themselves maybe aren't that interesting, but the delivery of the line is?
I have to remember what I wrote on this one. Go ahead.
I will give you, I think it's funny. I'm constantly looking for similarities between Frasier, Friends, and Seinfeld, the trifecta of Jeremy's sitcom life. And Frasier and Seinfeld both have, and Friends, all have episodes where there's an upstairs neighbor who's too loud. Mm-hmm. And on Frasier and Seinfeld, it's both a rock band in both episodes. But on the Frasier episode, the rock band has this song and they're so annoyed by it. But like by day three, they're zombie walking through the apartment going, flesh is burning. No, 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 no. Because that's the song these guys keep playing. And then at one point he's playing so loud and Frasier just loses his goddamn mind and says, doesn't he have any time left for sex and drugs? And it's just the delivery of that line just fucking kills me. It's a pretty good line. It's
yeah.
not bad. The words are not meaningless, but his delivery is what sells it.
yeah, for sure.
Did you figure out what you answered?
I did. I thought you had another one. So in The Big Lebowski, one of my favorite all-time moments is when John Turturro as the Jesus comes up and says, hey, you made the semifinals, going up to Jeff Bridges and John Goodman. He's like, you made the semifinals, Dios mio, man. And he's like, oh, fuck you up. We're going to fuck you up. And then the dude says, well, maybe that's just like your opinion, man. That's just like your opinion, man. I always love that, because it's like I think in movies we're always expecting for them to come up with that really witty retort and everything, and then you have your hero here who's always smoking weed and everything, and he's like, hey man, that's just like your opinion. And then in The Rock, Nicolas Cage going up to Sean Connery and saying, what do you say we cut the chit-chat, a-hole? You can probably go through Nicolas Cage's entire filmography. There's a thing in Vampire's Kiss where he's talking to Maria Conchita Alonso or whatever, and he's like, am I getting through to you, Alma? He's like all this weird, just the way he acts and everything. You can pretty much pick in almost any Nicolas Cage.
Oh yeah, anyway. He's got a lot of these lines. So we got in the chat some Martian love, fuck you Mars. Or it has been 3 days since I run out of ketchup. So I'm going to dip this potato in some crushed Vicodin and no one can stop.
Yep. From Pitch Black, looks clear. Character gets up, gets attacked, jumps back down. You said it was clear. I said it looks clear. Well, how does it look now? Looks clear. anyway, guys, that's going to do it for today. Thank you so much for coming out and making the comments lively once again, and appreciate you very much. Next week is the Hudsucker Proxy. I love this movie, even though there's a lot of people in the world who don't, but they're wrong. So
yeah, they are.
You know,
yeah, they are.
It's like our Sin City.
All right, thanks everybody.
All right, see you guys.
See you next time.
Part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
Welcome, one and all, to the live taping of Wreckatopia.
Hey. I don't know. I decided to go big. Might as well.
This is the weird thing. I'm on a YouTube page, and it says, give the gift of endless entertainment with YouTube gift codes, now available for purchase on Amazon. Which is very strange.
This is very weird. Yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting to see what you say about Monell's, because that's where they put you at a table and then other people sit at the table and you all share the things.
Yeah.
So
I get the idea behind that. That's probably the reason subconsciously that I've never actually gone, but they're always high on the list of best brunches in the city whenever I see
food them. Is great, of course, but like it's a weird thing. I mean, you have to kind of you have to kind of be okay with a lot of mixed company and people talking about things maybe you don't want to talk about, and
let's talk so about on your and so on.
My last trip to Monell's, which was in 2016, made me realize that Donald Trump was going to be president.
Oh, wow. Oh, because the people you were seated with?
Not because of, it was just one person, weirdly. Just one person. I was sitting at Monell's with this bunch of musicians who were, it was either Branford Marsalis or what's his brother's name? I can't remember.
Winston
Marsalis. It's one of the Marsalis brothers. They were musicians, backup musicians for that guy.
Oh, wow.
Sitting at my table. And some other dude who's like a bus driver, tour guy or whatever, sitting there. And there was discussion about the presidential race, and I think this was before maybe Trump had just gotten the Republican nomination. I don't know. It was something like that. And he said something like, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. He tells the truth. And I was like, oh, wow, that guy is popular for some reason.
Yeah.
He's popular. And I remember people I knew saying, oh, there's no way Donald Trump's going to win such and such a many states or whatever. I was like, he's going to win Tennessee, if anything.
The truth. Telling the truth can be dangerous. Business, honest and popular don't go hand in hand. If you admit that you can play the accordion, no one will hire you in a rock and roll band.
Ah, Ishtar.
Ishtar, baby. That's going to be a recommend one of these days if the show goes long enough. I love Ishtar. I don't think it still is, but for a time it was like the classic example of a flop, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was always the go-to. It's so much so that when Waterworld came out, they called it Fishtar. Just another one of those examples of why you should never film on the water.
Yeah. Why do that? Why?
And so the same year, Cutthroat Island had the same issues.
Yes.
Cutthroat Island was, you know, had a lot of production issues because of filming on the water and everything.
Yeah. That movie looks gorgeous, Cutthroat Island.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rennie Harlan knows what to do with the camera, but that the guts of that movie are crap.
We got to interview Rennie Harlan. That was a pretty awesome interview in a couple years ago. Was it last year? I can't remember. I think it was last year. Interviewing Rennie Harlan, and we were doing a movie. I can't remember the movie he was coming out with. It had Pierce Brosnan in it. And there's the scene where it's like this multi-level, big camera, swooping image of all these prisoners vomiting in this huge prison. And I was like, I don't know if I like this scene, but Rennie Harlan really loves making movies. You can tell that he loves it. Yep. And so there was a point where I asked him, I was like, you really love making movies, don't you? Like, you really do. Like, I can tell. Like, I was talking about this vomiting scene that's in this movie. And he's like, oh, yes, I love making. And he's one of these guys who's just like, he's making a movie, he's got another one in production, and he's editing another one. Yeah. You know, he's one of those kind of guys. And I fully respect that.
Oh, yeah, that dude's, I like that dude. I don't want any bad skeletons to come out of that guy's closet.
And he was married to Gina Davis at one time.
Yeah. Well, probably Gina even Davis. When they made Cutthroat Island.
I think so. Yeah.
He also make Long Kiss Goodnight.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought.
He did.
Yeah.
Which is a prime big recommend type movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Long Kiss Goodnight.
That movie, man. I felt like the only person in the world when I discovered that movie in the video store. Like, I feel like nobody had ever heard of this movie before I watched it, you know? I'm sure that's not the case, but it was like, this is awesome. What?
Yeah. I was working in a theater that had it, so I saw it.
And, oh, wow.
And I remember thinking it was all right, but I didn't, you know, it's one of those movies you see at midnight and you're just at by 2 o'clock in the morning. You're like, oh, yeah that's all right, I guess. That's fine. And then you watch it later, and you're like, oh, there were a lot of other good things in this, too.
I love that line that, fuck, the old guy has about the dog licking its ass, where he's like, I submit that whatever he's after is either already gone or there to stay.
Yeah.
Who is that? Brian.
Who was that old guy?
It's Brian.
Dennehy?
No, it's the guy that's on Succession.
Brian Cox,
yeah.
Yeah. No, not Brian fucking Dennehy.
Oh, man.
Brian Boitano.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line
prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.